Tonight, the major announcement of the COVID vaccine impacting millions of American children. Pfizer declaring its vaccine has been found safe and effective in children 5 to 11 years old, producing a robust antibody response. How soon could the FDA authorize the shot for those ages? Also, the U.S. making a big change to COVID flight restrictions, what travelers need to know, and the grim milestone, America's COVID death toll surpassing that of the 1918 Spanish flu. Also tonight, the U.S. stepping up deportation flights of Haitians after thousands crowded under a Texas bridge. And this image, a border agent on horseback blocking migrants, the White House's sharp response. The FBI searching the Florida home of Gabby Petito's fiancé, the parents of Brian Laundrie, questioned. The search for him intensifying after a body believed to be Petito's was found in a Wyoming national park. The massive plunge on Wall Street, the worst day for stocks since May. What's causing the slide? The deadly university shooting, chilling video of students jumping out of windows. And mission accomplished, what the all-civilian crew of the Inspiration 4 revealed to me about their historic journey in our exclusive conversation.
This is NBC Nightly News with Lester Holt.
Good evening, everyone. Today's big news from Pfizer that its vaccine is safe and effective for children ages 5 to 11 comes as beleaguered parents, schools, and hospitals confront an increasing number of pediatric COVID cases. Nearly 226,000 child COVID infections reported last week alone. The Pfizer vaccine for kids tested a smaller dose than what adults are receiving must now pass a rigorous review by the FDA before it's approved for emergency use. Once okayed, it opens another avenue of defense against the virus for children and the general population. But for some parents, it also forces hard questions, similar to the ones that have divided adults, to trust the vaccine or not. Stephanie Gosk has details.
Elementary schools could soon be better protected from COVID. Pfizer announcing today that its vaccine is safe and effective for children between the ages of 5 and 11. A trial of 2,000 kids showed they developed a strong immune response using one-third the dose given to older age groups.
We intend to submit the data by the end of the month. And then, of course, it will be up to the FDA to review that data.
The news comes as pediatric COVID cases in the U.S. have jumped 240% since July. Outbreaks causing more than 2,000 school closures across 40 states since the start of the school year.
This vaccine could not only prevent school closures, it could actually get us out of one of the most horrible phases of the pandemic we've experienced yet with the Delta variant.
Some parents are thrilled.
It's exciting. I mean, we already talked to our pediatrician about it for our five-year-old, so as soon as we can get it for her, we plan to do so.
Others will need to be convinced.
We don't know what's really in there, so I'm in fear that it will probably make him sick.
Last April, Ashley Poindexter Tarmate from Maryland was worried about her two daughters.
I don't feel safe enough. I don't feel like there's enough data for me to okay vaccinating them.
But since then, her 14-year-old got the shot, and her 9-year-old probably will as well when it's authorized.
Have you had yourself a change of heart?
I wouldn't say a change of heart. I would say the circumstances have changed. With the children's numbers going up in the hospitals and the different variants that's come into play.
What do you say to the parent who says, my children are at low risk, and on top of that, they're still going to have to wear masks when they go to school?
Yeah, I do think that we're going to have to show that as more children get immunized, that we can look at relaxing restrictions. It's a fair point.
But first, all eyes are on the FDA. Once they have the data, a decision could be just weeks away.
So, Stephanie, let's talk a moment about the really young ones. What's the status of vaccines for children under 5?
Lester, the testing is underway. Pfizer says they hope to have the results by the end of the year, and they couldn't come soon enough. Today, we have passed yet another painful milestone. More Americans have died from COVID-19 than from the 1918 Spanish flu pandemic. Lester?
Another stunning fact from all this. Stephanie, thank you. A major change affecting visitors to the United States for those fully vaccinated. The Biden administration is lifting restrictions on travel from 33 countries. Kelly O'Donnell is at the White House. Kelly, how will this play out?
Lester, this is a big step to reopen the skies and ease tensions with close U.S. allies in Europe. In November, foreign nationals who are fully vaccinated, show a negative COVID test, and provide contact tracing information will be able to fly to the U.S. Unvaccinated Americans flying abroad will need two negative COVID tests. Now, on booster shots, the White House is facing criticism that the president created confusion when he said vaccine booster shots for all adults could roll out this week, before the FDA panel decided differently and only approved Pfizer boosters for 65 and older. Today, the White House said it expects boosters will be approved for a wider group of Americans as this process continues. Lester?
All right, Kelly O'Donnell at the White House, thanks. Let's turn now to the migrant crisis on the Texas border. The Homeland Security Secretary was there today defending the federal response, saying his agency was taken by surprise by the huge influx of mostly Haitian migrants. Morgan Chesky is there tonight.
Tonight in Del Rio, Texas, this is where thousands without a home wait to see where they'll go tomorrow. Still, more than 10,000 migrants in this massive camp, mostly Haitians, surviving in makeshift shelters. The group swelling to nearly 15,000 strong this weekend until a mass convergence of law enforcement. Hundreds of state troopers in cars and Border Patrol agents on horseback, blocking more people from crossing the river into the United States.
It's heartbreaking.
Del Rio Mayor Bruno Lozano says calls for help from the Biden administration were mostly ignored till it was too late.
I've seen just the desperate looks of the people just trying to get processed. I mean, it's a completely dire situation.
Our crew granted exclusive access to speak with those whose future remains uncertain. This woman named Ivo told me she's barely eaten over the last week, adding she left Haiti years ago. Today, Texas Governor Greg Abbott requested a federal emergency declaration, blaming the Biden administration for failing to enforce immigration laws and halt illegal crossings. Federal authorities say they've removed 3,300 migrants here so far, 327 deported to Haiti, others taken to different processing centers in the United States. Senior DHS officials telling NBC News the administration will prioritize deporting single Haitian adults and families not claiming asylum. Unaccompanied children and most families asking for asylum can stay in the U.S. DH Secretary Alejandro Mayorkas visited Del Rio today, defending the federal response.
Were there enough in place for this surge?
I don't think we expected the rapidity of the increase that occurred.
What would you tell the woman I met under the bridge that if she goes back to Haiti, her life's in danger?
We are realistic about the human tragedy of this, but we have a responsibility not only to the well-being of the migrants themselves, but the well-being of the local communities and the American public.
Morgan, there's been a lot of attention today in some of those images of agents on horseback doing a crowd control, and there's questions over what they were holding. What can you tell us?
Yeah, Lester, White House spokesperson Jen Psaki called those images horrific to watch, but said she needed more information before officially making a comment. Meanwhile, Secretary Mayorkas here in Del Rio says it appears those were the rider's reins for the horse, but did promise to investigate. We're told that agents are not equipped with whips and ride horseback for their own protection. Lester.
All right, Morgan Chesky along the border tonight. Thank you. Breaking news tonight on the disappearance of Gabby Petito after authorities recovered a body believed to be that of a 22-year-old in Wyoming. FBI agents searched her fiancé's home in Florida. He has not been seen in almost a week and has been named a person of interest. Miguel Almaguer has the latest.
Today, the FBI executing a search warrant at the home Brian Laundrie shared with his parents and his fiancée, Gabby Petito. At what was called a crime scene, Laundrie's mother and father escorted away by agents who scoured the home looking for leads after their son vanished nearly a week ago.
Brian's stretching.
Laundrie was named a person of interest in Petito's disappearance days before a body was discovered in Wyoming.
Human remains were discovered, consistent with the description of Gabrielle Gabby Petito.
Just inside the Bridger Teton National Forest near a campground, investigators scouring the area but have not released a cause of death.
Still a crime scene, it's unclear how much time Petito may have spent here. It's the same area where a woman says she found Laundrie hitchhiking alone, which police are investigating.
He offered to pay us like $200.
to give him a ride.
The couple, who were documenting their cross-country journey in a van,
our plan for today is to just hang out,
had spent months together on the road, but came across trouble in Utah.
We drove by and a gentleman was slapping the girl.
After a 911 call from witnesses, police wearing body cameras found the pair in a domestic dispute.
We'd have been fighting all morning and he would have let me in the car before.
With no charges filed, their journey continued until Laundry returned home alone earlier this month. Petito's family reporting her missing 10 days later, her father speaking to Dateline's Andrea Canning Friday.
I have a gut feeling that something bad happened to her. I'm not gonna get her back.
With Gabby Petito gone, family and friends are remembering a life cut short. Her father saying she touched the world.
Miguel, any idea when we might have more answers?
Well, Lester, we could have an autopsy, even the cause of death as early as tomorrow. Laundry hasn't been seen in 6 days. His family in a statement today saying they were heartbroken by the death of his fiance. Lester.
Miguel Almaguer tonight. Thank you. Wall Street suffered its worst day since May as stocks tumbled, both the Dow and the S&P losing almost 2%. Senior business correspondent Stephanie Ruhle is here. Stephanie, what's behind the sell-off we saw?
Well, a few things, Lester. Starting overseas, Evergrande, a massive Chinese company, is at risk of defaulting on $300 billion worth of loans, which tells us maybe the global economy is not as strong as we thought. While in Washington, gridlock. There's no new budget set, so the federal government could face a shutdown. On top of that, Congress has not agreed on infrastructure or the debt ceiling, and the Federal Reserve meets this week, and we could get a signal that they're looking to raise interest rates in the future. And lastly, there's you and me, the consumer. We are still out there spending, but we're not as optimistic about the economy as we had been over the last few months. And remember, that's because Delta is spreading and prices are so high. That has got Wall Street worried.
Markets are chewing on a lot right now. All right, thanks, Stephanie. In just 60 seconds, a shooting rampage at a university leaves 6 people dead. We've got dramatic scenes of students escaping and new fallout from that U.S. drone attack that killed civilians in Afghanistan. Richard Engel will be here. A deadly mass shooting today at a university in Russia. Police say a gunman opened fire with a shotgun at a school east of Moscow, killing 6 people and wounding 28. In the chaos, students were seen jumping to safety from their rooms. Police shot and arrested the suspect, described as an 18-year-old student. His motive unclear. We'll turn now to Afghanistan and new fallout this evening from that U.S. drone strike that mistakenly killed 10 civilians, including 7 children, instead of an ISIS terrorist, as the Pentagon had originally claimed. Richard Engel has more tonight.
The Afghan family, the Pentagon now admits it mistakenly targeted and attacked with a drone, killing 10 innocent civilians, including 7 children, is demanding more than just an apology. They shouldn't kill innocent people, and they need to get us to a safe place, he said. CCTV footage obtained by the New York Times shows the man the Pentagon claimed was an ISIS terrorist was actually working for a U.S. aid agency. And before the drone strike, he was putting water jugs in his car, not bombs. The U.S. military said it had intel that a white Toyota Corolla like his could be used in an ISIS attack. It's also one of the most popular vehicle makes and colors in Kabul.
I'm here today to set the record straight and acknowledge our mistakes.
Now in control of Afghanistan, the Taliban may be showing their true colors. And women are back on the streets, protesting after public schools restarted, but no high school for girls. The Taliban say the lockout is temporary while they work out logistics to separate boys and girls. But most female government employees are also being told to stay home for the same reason.
Richard, joining me here in the studio, President Biden will speak before the UN tomorrow, will likely defend U.S. handling in Afghanistan. What are your thoughts?
It's good to be here, first of all. But this is a big speech. His credibility is on the line because so far he hasn't really acknowledged any mistakes. He said that everything more or less went according to plan. Maybe it got a little bit messy toward the end. Much of the world saw it very differently. They saw an absolutely chaotic withdrawal that empowered the Taliban and created instability in Central Asia. Will he acknowledge any of that?
All right, Richard, thank you. Great to have you stateside. Thanks. For at least a little bit. More on the withdrawal from Afghanistan tomorrow on Today. Savannah Guthrie discusses it with British Prime Minister Boris Johnson. Up next for us here tonight, a volcano explodes for the first time in half a century. We'll look at its destructive past. There's a state of emergency tonight in the Spanish resort island of La Palma, where a volcano has erupted for the first time in 50 years. Thousands forced to evacuate as the lava destroyed about 100 homes, though there have been no reports of injuries or deaths. After the hottest summer in the U.S. on record, the Biden administration unveiled a new effort today to protect Americans from what it calls a silent killer, extreme heat. And it can be especially dangerous in neighborhoods that have become known as urban heat islands. Morgan Radford explains in our series, Climate Challenge.
From the moment her day begins.
Describe the heat. What does it feel like?
Well, I wipe the sweat off. I'm melting.
Annie Moore has to fight the heat.
Get out about 7 o'clock before it really steams up by 10, 10:30.
So you have to, like, plan your day around the heat.
I do.
She's now one of hundreds of volunteers.
This reads the temperature, and you watch the temperature on the app on your phone.
Working on a project called Urban Heat ATL. Volunteers using special technology to map Atlanta's temperature block by block.
What type of neighborhood are we in right now?
We're in a predominantly black neighborhood.
And how hot is it here?
It's about 92.6 degrees Fahrenheit.
The goal? To prove some neighborhoods are hotter than others. New research shows that more than 70% of U.S. counties, low-income, non-white neighborhoods experience more extreme surface heat than their wealthier, whiter counterparts. The reason? Urban heat islands, unshaded asphalt areas that amplify heat.
We see that black and brown neighborhoods are simply hotter or feel hotter than white ones. Why is that?
We have a lack of green space, lack of parks, perhaps a lack of trees. And that sort of critical natural infrastructure are the things that help us to cool our communities.
So what does the solution look like when all this is said and done?
We hope that government officials will respond to our data. We want to see more well-maintained parks, green space, and trees in communities of color.
Changes that can't come soon enough for Annie.
I think we need to really rethink, how do we keep the earth cool? Now it's time for us to fix it.
Working to fix a global problem one step at a time. Morgan Radford, NBC News, Atlanta.
And up next, as we continue tonight, my exclusive interview with the crew of the Inspiration Space Mission and what they said about sleeping in space during that 3-day trip. If you look at the sky tonight, you can likely catch a glimpse of the harvest moon at its peak. The large orange-colored full moon occurs closest to the autumnal equinox, heralding the arrival of fall on Wednesday. Those scenes perhaps only surpassed by the views from space for the 4 civilian astronauts who orbited the Earth and touched down this weekend. I got a chance to speak with them in Florida for an exclusive interview.
Inspiration 4, welcome home to planet Earth.
Thanks so much, SpaceX. It was a heck of a ride.
A heck of a ride and a heck of an accomplishment for the civilian astronauts of Inspiration 4. Show of hands, who would still rather be up there?
Yeah.
Really? Was there a little disappointment when it was time to come home?
There was definitely mixed emotions. That last view of the Earth and the cupola made me emotional.
Wow.
Because it was just so awe-inspiring, and I knew I'd be thinking about that for the rest of my life.
I'll ask you this question because you're not, you know, professional astronauts. Was it scary? I think that's a question a lot of people want to know.
I mean, we were trained so well. We were not scared in the least. I know we had plenty of people on the ground, our loved ones who were watching us and supporting us. We're so relieved and so excited and so happy to celebrate with us as soon as we splashed down.
The splashdown capping off a successful 3-day mission. The crew gathering data, collecting images of Earth, and getting to experience the daily rituals of human life in a way only a handful of others have. Did anybody really sleep up there? I mean, really sleep?
I slept great in space.
Really?
I slept better in space than I did last night back on Earth. You're floating, and it's so comfortable.
Where can this be taken, this whole idea of putting non-professional astronauts in space?
We know so little about our universe. I mean, we're just like a speck in the grand scheme of things. And I think there's questions that, you know, people have been asking themselves since the beginning of humankind, and I think the answers are out there, and we've got to go and find them.
For Dr. Cyan Proctor, the first black woman to pilot a spacecraft, a once-deferred dream has been realized. Dr. Proctor, it's not lost on any of us that you wanted to be an astronaut for a very long time. You applied at NASA, got into the finals at one point, but didn't make it. How sweet is it? Okay, obviously very sweet.
Yes, it is. And so it's just amazing. This is the best way that I could ever imagine going to space.
While Haley Arsenault can't wait to share her experience with the kids at St. Jude's, the place she was once treated for bone cancer, where she now treats young patients herself.
I'm excited to get back to St. Jude. I want to tell all these kids that if I can do this, they can do this.
The highlight for Flight Commander Jared Isaacman was news he learned when he reached the ground that they had surpassed their $200 million fundraising goal.
Knowing that the bigger mission of reaching out and inspiring a lot of people to contribute to a real cause here on Earth that was important to us was St. Jude, and then exceeding it, that was like the most powerful moment for, I think, a lot of us.
Mission accomplished.
We got a lot of problems down here, but Haley, how do we look from up there as a planet?
Beautiful. Just so united. That's one thing that I really took away from seeing the Earth is it was just one.
Fair to say they're all walking on air still tonight. That's nightly news for this Monday. Thank you for watching, everyone. I'm Lester Holt. Please take care of yourself and each other. Good night.